Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Is the Billboard Sharpie podcast. Gary Trust here in Billboard's New York offices with maybe the person most responsible for shaping hip rock music in New York City with us here today, Rita Houston, program director of WFUV Radio.
Thank you for that kind intro, Gary.
It's true, isn't it, Rita?
I'm so happy the latitude that we have at WFUV to kind of follow our hearts, which you guys are in the radio business, you know that that has become, for better or for worse, a bit of a rarity for programmers. And there is a lot of heart in the building at WFUV, and we get to run with that. It seems like a kind of old-fashioned notion, and I'm sure to many it sounds like a notion that might doom your business to just let a bunch of music lovers follow their hearts. Of course, we consult data and all of that, and we make informed choices, but most of it is just that. And I'm glad to hear you say that, because it's nice that that latitude has right. led to guys like you in the business going, no, this works. This can work.
Imagine playing music you think listeners might like. Yeah. Imagine that concept.
And imagine playing music that that you like. And, you know, that's not to say 100% of the music that's on WFUV. If you ever walked into my living room on a Friday, on a Saturday night, you'd hear, you know, it doesn't mean I love everything.
Right.
But I really don't hate a lot of what we play on FUV, and that says a lot for a programmer. That's a, you know, I'm a lucky girl.
Right.
Is pretty much the takeaway on that. You know, it's a rare place in the radio world these days.
We'll get into all that, your background, Rita. Also someone very important here, Kevin Rutherford, our Billboard Rock Chart manager, joining us on the podcast as well.
Yeah, significantly less important than I think everybody else in this room. But, I appreciate it, yeah.
The most humble.
We'll go with that. I'm really excited to be here because I know I don't own a car. I used to own a car back when I lived in Ohio. But when I do have a car and I'm driving in the area, I know FAUV is like one of my favorite stations to listen to, because just such a great variety. And so I know when we drove up to Maine about 2 months ago, we listened to it as long as we could until the station went out. We're like, oh well,
you didn't turn around, Kevin. Stop.
No, I kept going, but man, I would have loved to keep listening. There was some good stuff.
Maine is that pretty, you had to keep going.
absolutely.
Well, Kevin, you actually wrote about Rita. Billboard just honored yes. you, Rita. I'm going to embarrass you again now. But you were just named one of our top rock programmers. Kevin, you guys spoke about that, right?
That's right. Yeah, that was a couple weeks ago. And we did, I think, was a top 20, 25, something like that, of basically programmers we think are really shaping rock radio right now as a whole. And Rita was obviously someone who came up very early on in the discussion. Obviously made the cut, and we were really excited about it. I think it ended up being a pretty awesome profile, for sure.
The whole piece was interesting, really. Thank you again, guys. I was just really honored to be included there, and love the fact that WFUV is identified as a rock station. I think that's so right on and so important to, like, kind of, you know, what we are all about. But it was also interesting to see what other stations around the country are doing, and there's a lot of great work happening right now, I think, in radio on the alternative indie, not just public radio, but plenty of adventurous commercial stations too. So your piece really did shine a light on that.
Well, we'll get into that. I want to ask just your take on the state of rock radio nowadays and so many other things. But one thing I've always wondered, I was a music director in radio before I came to Billboard. I've never been a program director of a professional station. I honestly don't know what a program director does. I know a music director schedules the music. There's more of a set schedule. Tell everyone, Rita, what is the job of a program director nowadays?
It's interesting. In the case of WFUV and my gig, it is kind of a three-headed monster of programming, leadership, and fundraising. And I think for a lot of PDs and MDs around the country, on the commercial end, you know, very involved in NTR stuff. On the non-com end, very involved in events, connecting with members, working with major donors, creating experiences and opportunities for people to become supporters of the station, whether that's $5 a month or whether that's an annual gift of $10,000 or $20,000. So I think when I first got into the work at WFUV 22 years ago, I had no idea at the time that three-headed monster that lied ahead. Always knew that music would be a part of it, always knew that talent and creative leadership would be a part of it, but the fundraising membership part of it has become vital to our survival.
What percentage would you say is getting to listen to music, doing the real hands-on radio side of things? What part of it is on those elements, fundraising, managing the your staff and just the management side?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a kind of a three-headed equal monster. I mean, I am a lucky girl. I have a great team, including Russ Boris, our music director. Russ has endless appetite to check out new music and does a great job of being our key filter. Our AMD, Carmel Holt, who also does middays at FUV, another person, big ears, endless appetite, really does a great job of filtering. Because I still fancy myself a DJ, and I kind of love that part of it, love doing shows and stuff. I do listen to a lot of music, you know, weekly. I'm combing through, but really rely on Russ and Carmel to be that first filter. And I think what makes us a good team is that we all have particular directions that we like to go in and then bring those to the fold. And I think that's what adds up to the sort of eclectic nature of FUV's mix. But, I would say it's a three-headed monster kind of divided up into thirds.
Has it changed a lot in the social media era? I know you tweet a lot. Is it a whole different world than what it was maybe even 10 years ago?
You know, I hate to say it, but I think like tweeting and all the social media stuff, it comes very natural to me.
Yeah.
So people say, how do you have time for that? Or people say, I don't have time for Twitter. I don't have time for Instagram, you know, and I'm always like, well, how do you not have time? You know, to me, it doesn't take time. It's just kind of like another opportunity to share what's going on in my life with the world. Clearly something I love, or, you know, it's a little bit of that too, I think. But, I mean, it does take time.
Right.
All kidding aside, but for me, somehow, there's something about Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff just comes naturally. And it's like if I'm out and about, you know, and it all comes down to the little device, rectangular device that we all walk around with in our palms, you could just make anything happen, you know. So it's like I'll be tweeting about us doing this, you know. Right. It's just like it's become as natural. And I think for the people who, you know, in the social media world, I think the ones who feel that way about it are the ones who are probably doing it the most, and then the people who are like, I don't have time for that, or I'm so busy, I don't have time for Instagram, you know, then it becomes more of a bear for them. But I kind of like it.
It sort of goes along with just the whole mindset of public radio and a station like WFUV. I always feel like when I listen to FUV, it's such a personal connection with the listeners that you don't really get, I think, on other formats. It really sounds like the DJ is speaking to me more than maybe any other format. Is that sort of a hallmark of the station or of the overall sound of a public AAA station?
You know, I think that's about the nicest compliment you could make, you know, we really appreciate that because we do kind of, you know, we do pride ourselves on that. And I think there are probably people in the business who think, you could just voice track. You don't have to do that. Back sell, front sell, give me a forward promote. Nobody cares what the DJ thinks, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I grew up in New York. I'm a lifelong New Yorker. Well, most cities, anyone who grew up in the, you know, 70s or 80s, you know, and commercial radio. I mean, even beyond that, even, you know, DJs always meant something to people. And right. I think when we all look back on our past, our childhood, whatever, you know, wherever you grew up, you had your, you know, your cousin Brucey, your Oedipus, whoever, you know, whoever it was in, you know, in your city who meant something to you. So I think in New York, that progressive rock radio loomed large for me growing up here, you know, so like Scott Muni, Vin Scelsa,
right.
Allison Steele, Pete Fornatel, Dennis Elsis. I mean, these are like the Mount Rushmore of the business. And I think, you know, Scott Muni, I mean, Muni, you know, everybody, Ken Daschau, Meg, Carol Miller, right. You know, the list goes on. To have had that, you know, growing up and stuff, obviously really informed me. But I think at WFUV, it's also just a part of our DNA, kind of keeping that kind of progressive rock radio alive because WNEW no longer exists in New York. And, you know, Dennis does afternoons on FUV and, you know, Meg worked at FUV for a time, as did Pete Fornatel and until he passed, and Vin Scelsa just retired. So, like, to be able to actually work with these guys, too, and bring them into the WFUV fold, it was kind of an interesting place where commercial radio guys wanted to play in the non-commercial world and the non-commercial radio guys wanted to learn from the commercial radio guys.
Right.
And I think it was a winning combination for WFUV. And I think for a lot of non-com stations, as we've developed, you know, just all the non-com stations around the country developed our sound, a lot of it has had to do with learning from commercial radio, you know, because there's a lot to learn there as a programmer and, you know, how to manage DJs and manage talent and stuff, but then to play by that different rule book and to put those two things together.
I'm glad Kevin is here because we can do an interesting experiment here. Kevin, you're in your mid-20s, right?
That's correct, yes.
You said, when do you listen to radio, really? You said it was when you're in your car, right?
But pretty much, yeah.
And now you don't have a car.
That's right, yeah, yeah. You know, when I lived in the Midwest, obviously I had a car. That's how you get around. And, you know, I lived in the country. So, but I was still the type of person who did listen to radio even, you know, 3 years ago, whereas a lot of people I knew had moved on to, you know, they started putting their iPod on shuffle and just plugging that into the radio, the console, however you do it. And that's how they did it. I know my younger brother did that sometimes. I don't know if he listened to radio all the time, did not, whatever. But, like, he would do that sort of thing. And I knew other people who did the same thing. But I was always, like, really interested in radio and, you know, the discovery and that sort of thing. So I would always do that. And I always still try to whenever I do, like, rent a car for whatever reason. So that's, like, kind of one of my favorite things about renting a car whenever I'm going anywhere. Even if I'm just going out to, like, Long Island or something, I'm just driving out there. I'm like, oh, yeah, I get to listen to the radio today. This is fun. This is awesome, you know? But, yeah, so I'm, like, one of those weird ones that still, I think, enjoys it.
All right, you're one of the good younger radio listeners.
I suppose, yeah. All right. Look at me go. Yeah.
But, Rita, do you come across that with younger listeners haven't necessarily grown up with radio? And what's your take on how are you going to keep younger generations interested in radio?
I tell you, man, when you open your eyes, it's scary.
Yeah.
I mean, it's enough to scare someone like me when you realize that, like, for example, do you even have a radio in your house anywhere?
No.
Beyond your phone?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Why would you? Yeah, if I want
to
listen to radio, I pretty much have to do it on the computer, you know?
Right.
That's for me, at least. And I think a lot of people my age are the same way. Yeah.
It used to have, like, a clock. At least people would have a clock radio. Well, that's changed. No one's going to, like, Best Buy. Oh, let's look at the clock radios they have right now.
Right.
You know, so, like, I think the hardware has kind of, like, left. You know, that's not a factor anymore.
Right.
Now, of course, you can listen to FUV and many things just on your phone. You know, you get the TuneIn app or you use our app or whatever. But it's still not the same, right, as having a clock radio next to your bed or whatever. So I think, you know, it's it's a scary time, you know, for radio. I, you know, on the public radio end, you know, our audience tends, leans towards early adopters, more tech savvy. So, you know, that is works in our favor, I think. But, you know, if we're looking a couple of years down the road when radio, terrestrial radio, as the satellite guys like to call us, we just like to call it radio. If radio isn't in cars anymore, even, right? We're already moving to a place where CDs aren't in cars.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a, you know, there's a lot of change ahead. The ground beneath us is definitely, definitely moving.
There's still so much infrastructure with the towers, though, and the financial aspects of that. Maybe we're just headed towards a time where it's that, and radio is just another option among streaming choices. Maybe it's just going to be some combination at this point.
That's what you hope. And, you know, the thing, content is king. You know, if you're doing good stuff, people find a way to do it. You kind of have to be platform agnostic, you know, is what the consultants tell us these days, you know. And I believe in all of that, completely believe in all of that. Yeah, so it's, you know, it's an interesting time because when you talk about, you know, millennials or people in their 30s, who you look at FUV on paper and you're like, all right, you're a 28-year-old. You would dig this. You would dig what FUV is all about. How are we possibly going to find these 28-year-olds? I mean, now it's a marketing challenge.
Right.
Now, try marketing something in New York. Good luck. You know, like, how do you rise above the noise? How do you get, you know, it's not like we're in whatever, Pittsburgh, where you go, oh, let's buy a billboard right on the highway. Hey, listen to us. We play cool stuff. Great, you know, we can't afford that in New York. I mean, it's the you know, the economy gets crazy. So I think, yeah, looking down the road, I get a little worried sometimes.
Same thing with asking for listener donations. That's what drives public radio. Is that tougher than ever, economy wise?
Yeah, I think so. I think it kind of comes and goes, and we are very aggressive about finding the best ways to go about it. We make use of a lot of tools. We enter things with solid strategy. But even with all of that, it's become a lot harder to get people to support radio. And there's also a hand-in-hand relationship. As the audience gets younger, it is harder to raise funds.
Right.
Just because of the mindset of paying for music and what, you know, just even the Napster generation did to that,
right,
for CDs or any, you know, just music in general. Now here comes public radio going, oh, wait, you love us? You should pay for it. You pay whatever you want, $10 a month, $20 a month, whatever. Well, this is a foreign concept to somebody in their 20s, and it's almost, I don't know, like a good laugh. Like,
right,
wait a minute, why would I do that, you know? So then you try to present yourself as a service. Hey, this is a service. If you like this service, please pay for it. And then there's some more success to be had there. But fundraising, you know, fundraising is tough, tough business on the air right now. We are lucky, you know, we have major donors and stuff, but the bulk of our support, the bulk of our funding still comes from rank and file listeners giving us, you know, $10-$20 a month.
And there's also a lot of exclusives people can get if they're a member. It's not just like they're paying to listen. There are concerts that happen at the station, different events. So that's comes down to exclusivity. That's a reason to pay, that you can't just get that streaming music.
That's true. And I think like savvy New York music lovers have like kind of figured out like, whoa, if I support FUV, like we have this program called Marquee Membership. And it's $1,200 a year. That's $100 a month. But you'll get invited to private shows and live tapings that we do across the year. Well, if you're a savvy music lover and you're paying $100 a month, which is a nice chunk of change,
right,
that, you know, and but in return for that, you're going to see Lucinda Williams at Rockwood or Jose Gonzalez at Rockwood or Brett Denon at McKittrick or these sort of exclusive events. I think some savvy music lovers have been like, wait a minute, this is actually a very good deal, you know, once you do the math.
And so many people come through New York that really works to your advantage, that you can have all these guests and have people meet them.
Yeah, and we've really turned that into you know, we've also turned it into a content opportunity. So when we do these, it's taping, and we'll do video and post the video and turn it into a live broadcast and stuff. But the only way to be in the audience is to be, you know, one of our donors. So that's been a lot of fun for me to grow that program and that membership level. And it's one of our most successful membership levels, and it's a fairly high level, but we're making a lot of people happy with it.
Talked about liking rock radio growing up. How'd you actually get into the profession of being on the radio?
Kind of, you know, like a lot of things, you know, luck and passion kind of collided. Fortunately, luck, passion, and, you know, the ability to work for $7 an hour for a while. You know, I had a few guardian angels who helped facilitate that, and also just, you know, waited more tables than I ever care to mention, and more overnight shifts and stuff. But
where'd you work radio before?
It was all commercial radio before I got to WFUV. My first job was at WVIP in Mount Kisco, which was a CHR AM/FM combo owned by this guy named Martin Stone, who made his wealth in he had the licensing to Howdy Doody. You know that character, Howdy Doody?
Right.
And he bought essentially the local hometown radio station in Mount Kisco, New York, up in Upper Westchester. And that was my first job, and I worked there. I was 6 to midnight on the air.
Was the Howdy Doody theme in heavy rotation?
No, it wasn't. But I was on the FM, which was straight up CHR. You know, we're playing New Shoes. I can't wait. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. You know, and Philip Bailey and Phil Collins, she's an E. You know, it was like straight up that stuff.
Rita Houston sings pop hits of the 80s.
Yes,
only here on the podcast.
Fantastic.
Yeah. She's an easy lover. You know, so that was that format. And then on the AM station, which was adjacent, you know, in the building, you know, it'd be like, there's a lost dog on Route 117. Please, you know, it was real homegrown radio.
Right.
So I got my, found my sea legs there. We had Tom Fursey was the music director at the time and did middays.
Right.
And, of course, he is a wonderful DJ who works now on HUD.
Right.
Great guy. He was always super sweet to me. But I was making, I don't know, I think it was $7 an hour. I was a courier during the day, and I worked 6 to midnight, and I finally hit the wall. I just couldn't manage it any longer. So I heard about this I loved being on the air and hitting the post. You know, that was all about that then. And I heard about these jobs at ABC Radio Network where you could get hired as a vacation relief engineer.
Oh, okay, right.
Those NABET gigs back in the days of unions and NABET in the broadcasting world. And so I applied through ABC, and I guess I was 27 years old, and I got hired. So I was going to leave WVIP and my $7 an hour for a legit salary, benefits, the whole nine yards. And although it was vacation relief, it was just going to be a 3 or 4 month thing. I thought, oh, I'll find my way in there, and maybe something, I'll see what else happens. But this $7 an hour thing is just not sustainable, and I'm going to give up this dream of, you know, doing the radio or whatever. So I get to ABC, and I'm an engineer, studio engineer, learned how to cut tape, carried Nagras, went on the Dukakis campaign trail, and, you know, it did some cool stuff, you
right.
know. But very quick, funny story. The day I was leaving WVIP, I went on the air and said, today's my last day, and all the phones lit up, you know, because we had the phone.
Right.
With all the buttons, you know, and all 10 lines were, like, flashing. I'd never seen so many. So I picked it up, and it was emotional, you know, because I didn't want to do this.
Yeah.
I just financially had to and needed to, like, be a grown-up and, you know. And one of the calls was from Al Roker, who he and his wife lived up that way, like in Bedford Hills or whatever. And he said, listen, this is Al Roker. And, you know, he was like, this is Al Roker. Like, and I was like, oh, my gosh, it is Al Roker. You know, like, and this is 20, you know, this even close to 30 years ago. And he said, I don't know what your story is or what you're doing, but you have something special, and I'm really sorry to hear that you're leaving.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh my gosh, like I couldn't believe it, you know. And I said, well, you know, finances got tough, whatever. And he said, well, you know, I hope you surface again because, you know, you have something special to say, you know. And I was like, oh, you know, on to the next thing. And but those words stayed with me.
Right.
And I went to ABC and I ended up getting hired full time at ABC. And, you know, those were great gigs. I mean, I had terrible hours. My hours were 1 a.m. to 9 a.m. or 3 a.m. to 11 a.m. And I was off on like Tuesdays and Wednesdays. I mean, it was horrible, but it was
not
like
even
money.
Not even a normal overnight.
Just not like even
half,
a normal,
half
yeah.
Days. Yeah, you don't know when to sleep.
And, you know, but it was working in a newsroom and it was, you know, it was a lot of fun. But I was like, oh, I hate this, man. I got to get out. So when.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
They busted the union, Cap Cities. When the union got busted, we got buyouts to leave. So I was like first in line. I was like, yeah, I'll take this. So basically kind of worked into, you know, the buyout allowed me to now get back into radio, go back to working for $7 an hour. And bless Paul Cavalcante, who was the one to hire me at the time it was WZFM. Also in Westchester.
Okay.
That was the old R&W. WRNW were Howard Stern and Meg
right.
Griffin, and one of the original progressive 107.1 progressive stations was R&W. Then it became ZFM. So I started working there, did overnights, kicked around for a long time, did remotes, plumbing supply houses on Saturdays, car dealerships. I mean, that was what I did, but I was determined. And then I started waiting tables, and I was determined to stay in radio at that point.
One thing that's kind of lucky, you don't hear this from everyone in radio, you at least got to stay in the area where you grew up and lived. You didn't have to go all around the country.
I'm so lucky in that way because
yeah.
I'm a New Yorker and I slugged it out in the suburbs and didn't never had to leave New York.
Right. And then did you get to FUV? Right
I pretty
that?
Much got to FUV from there. So then I became the I became a host at ZFM, and then we became WXPS. For a time, and it was owned by a couple, Bobby and Barry Lewis. They lived in Rockland County. I was just like, yeah, remember when people just owned little radio stations, you know? And that's what it was. And they sold to Mike Kakianis and friends. And then Kakianis came in with Steve Blatter doing the programming, and now XPS was going to become X107.
Right.
They proceeded to come in, do the whole bloodshed on the walls, fired everybody, bring me into the office, and I think I'm getting fired because everybody, you know, the morning show got fired, you know, right through the day. I did nights, so I'm like, okay. And like the local newspaper had just named me best DJ or whatever. And I walk into the office there with the new boss, you know, meet the new boss. And on his desk is the copy of that newspaper. So I'm like, oh, sweet. I might be okay. Maybe I'm not going to get fired. He sees that the people voted me best DJ. You know, and on one hand, I'm like devastated that my friends are
right.
blown out. But, you know, you get in that crazy survival mode. I'm like, maybe I won't get fired. So I sit down, and I'm very nervous, and he said, oh, you know, they said, oh, look at this newspaper. I said, oh, I'm glad you guys saw that, feeling, you know, my feathers getting puffy, you know. Oh, I'm glad you guys saw that. He takes it, he rolls it up in a ball, throws it in the trash.
Oh, my God.
He goes, our next question for you, do you want to live in the past, and points to the trash can, or do you want to move to the future with us? The choice is yours.
I was like,
Whoa.
I'd like to move into the future, yes. You know. So I ended up staying there for a bit, but I hated every minute of it. I changed my name to Harley Fox. That's when I was Harley Fox, and all the DJs, we were like the Gen X station. I mean, it was...
Did you pick that name, or did someone pick it for
you? I picked it, and I said, all lowercase. I did Afternoon Drive. I was on 3 to 8. I was like the after-school special. It was an indie rock station. All these, like, 12-year-olds would listen, you know, call on the phone, hey, Harley, what's up? Like, what's up, Dylan? You know, what's up, Brett? You know, like all the kids in the suburbs. You know, I had a little following. It was fun. You know, we were playing straight up, you know, indie hits. You know, it was Nirvana, it was Pearl Jam, it was Stone Temple Pilots, it was U2. I mean, it was, you know, I mean, it was an amazing time in music, too.
Absolutely.
But I didn't want to be there, you know, and I didn't want to be Harley Fox, that's for sure. But it was great because, you know, as a talent, I learned a lot through that process of being something else and how to, like, present no matter what.
Right.
And that it's not always about what you love. It's about, you know. But as soon as, you know, my eyes were open the whole time, and as soon as I saw an opening at FUV, then I got hired at FUV as middays.
Oh, okay. And you've been there 22 years now.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was 22 years ago.
Since Harley Fox, it's been 22 years since we last heard from her.
It was funny. My mom was like, why would they make you do that? I go, Mom, it's even too... How do you explain that one to your mom? Mom, I'm now on the radio, but I say my name is Harley Fox, you know.
Yeah. So that had to feel so good. You go to FUV and you're back in that mental space of the adult alternative, which sounds like is really more your calling personally.
You know, definitely. And it was like, that was an amazing time too. It's Sean Colvin, it's Patty Griffin, it's Gillian, it's Lucinda. Yeah, I mean, it was like, whoa. I mean, Richard Thompson, Counting Crows. I mean, this was the music that I was, you know, that I was really into and listening to. And when I landed at WFUV, it was like, wow. You know, we could play this stuff.
Right.
And that was, 22 years ago. So I started middays, and a few years later I became MD when Liz Apoka left. Liz Apoka was a great music director at FUV, and she left to go to the label side, so then I became MD. So then I was middays and MD, and then I hit that wall of burnout. So then I took myself off the air, just became music director. And so I've been off the air full time since then.
Okay.
And then I went from MD to PD when we had a shift at the station. Our general manager retired, so Chuck became GM, and I moved into PD.
Okay.
There was the secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord.
I feel like you have probably interviewed a lot of people, a lot of rock stars, a lot of people in the business over the years. Your Rolodex, if that still exists, whether it's digital or not, that must be one of the more impressive ones in the industry.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. Again, it's like one of those things at FUV where we have the latitude to, like, talk to people, bring artists in, talk to them about what they're into, what inspired their music, what inspires them, more long-form conversations. It's really a thing of the past. I mean, that used to be on the radio a lot. Of course, you know, consultants, PPM, you know, there's a million reasons why a lot of people will tell you, and there's some validity to what they say. That's a really bad idea. Don't put an artist on for 20 minutes to talk about themselves and play, you know, music. I think we do a good job of it at FUV. You know, we all have a hand in hosting the interviews. I've done some of the best. The quick answer to who's the best, who's the worst. Worst, Chrissy Hynde, nightmare.
Really?
For me, worst day of my life in the radio biz. I don't know what her issue was. I mean, I saw The Pretenders in 78 at, what's the name of that club in Portchester? It just flew out of my head. Detroit. Club Detroit. I was a huge fan. Maybe I just rubbed her the wrong way or whatever. Disaster interview.
What'd you ask her, Rita?
I don't even know. I don't even know. It was just a mess, man. She hated me. And I was like, come on, let's just be professional. Get the job done. You can go on your way, you know.
Have you met her other times? Or that?
No.
No, that was it.
No. Never held a grudge. Of course, we still play Pretenders and whatever. I don't know that I'd jump in feet first to interview her again. It was just like silly, like abusive almost. She was like mean to the staff and stuff. Like she was just mean. Maybe she's having a bad day. I don't know. But it was like that doesn't happen like a lot in our world. That was the worst. Best one. But I'll say Leonard Cohen.
Yeah.
When Lisa Sonkin at Columbia asked if I would host this Leonard Cohen listening party at Joe's Pub, was that 2 or 3 years ago? And that was just amazing, just to sit next to him and talk to him, you know. And, you know, just to be in the presence of artists as somebody who has never written a song, can't play a single note of anything.
You can sing.
I can sing. I'm a big karaoke fan, but it's amazing that I get to talk to all these artists without having a lick of actual talent.
I think when we emailed back and forth sometime in the past couple months, you were talking to Paul Simon that day.
That's right.
What'd you think of the new album? Because that's out here very couple days ago.
Yeah. I love the new album. It's such a cool combination of, I'm going to reference my sister, Debbie, because my sister and I have very different taste in music. Like, she loves Barry Manilow is, like, her number one. And she has great taste in music, but it's, like, we're just totally opposites musically. But, like, the Paul Simon record just, like, as a casual listen, you could throw that on, blast it in your car, and be like, this is an awesome Paul Simon record. This is... And then if you're me who, like, dives in and has to have headphones on and listen to all the... It's an incredible album. It is so rewarding. You know, I got to interview him. We played it on FUV. I mean, he really spoke about what inspired him and stuff. And when you hear some of the stories behind it, it's so, you know, he thought so. So I think it's a fantastic record, but really does walk that line between like, yeah, it's a great Paul Simon record, but it's deep. It's, you know, it's really deep.
Absolutely. I think I've listened to about 3 times now. I think every time I discover something new, especially in the instrumentation, it's really cool. Really cool to hear.
Kevin is our resident Paul Simon fan because
you've
been talking about Disturbed's cover of Sound of Silence.
Yes.
This year. That's been your
that's,
song.
That's been
the
my
year,
beat kinda. This year, yeah. I keep bringing it up in meetings just like, hey, guys, this is still going up the charts. And now it's getting – I'll get people from back home like texting me like, why am I hearing Disturbed on pop radio right now? And I'm like, you know, just a weird year. It's just a weird year.
Well, it's a great
year.
Song that translates. Yeah. To any cover, including that one.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I think that's right. And it is so, that is so cool. And Paul Simon, like, was the one to post it on his site. Like, mm-hmm. He loved it.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is pretty cool. Because you never know. Just Disturbed, I think, you know, a lot of mainstream rock artists catch a lot of flack, especially some of the older ones. You know, it seems like, oh, man, they're pretty uncool or whatever. So I think when you saw Paul Simon give the nod of approval, it's like, all right. You know, look at them. They got Paul on board. Not bad. You know?
You obviously wouldn't play that, Rita, on FUV.
You know, right? I'm like sitting here thinking, going, no. I'm like thinking, like, gosh, why haven't we given that a spin or two? Yeah. You know, it totally makes sense.
Well, it gets pretty loud at the end, I guess.
Yeah,
that
but it's
be the reason.
I think that's the kind of thing that should get a couple of curiosity spins.
Okay.
You know,
look at that. Kevin, gotten Disturbed
not?
On FUV.
I'll check it out, see if I hear it, yeah.
Your mission.
Oh, my goodness.
Your mission continues, and you're starting to get some results here, right?
Here we are.
But that's what's fun about AAA, and probably, I guess, at the same time, the challenge. It's one of the least defined formats. If you're working in top 40, you pretty much know you're playing Selena Gomez and Justin Bieber. AAA, which is FUV, Adult Alternative, can almost be anything you or the listeners think it is.
Mm. Yeah, when you look at stations around the country, our currents and our golds are so different.
Right.
And I totally agree. It is a big challenge for the format moving forward, but it's also our greatest strength, right? Well, how do you negotiate that? What do you do with that? You don't want to mess it up and be like, no, guys. And we all, you know, all of us around the country consult the charts and BDS and stuff and make our choices kind of in unison, you know, and for the most part we'll play singles, you know, of labels. But beyond that, it can go, you know, in so many directions and with each station having its own stripe. And that will probably ultimately be the factor that saves us all.
Yeah, I have wondered that actually, because a lot of people I talk to my age who do still listen to radio, a lot of what they're listening to is AAA radio. And I think part of that might be because, you know, wherever you go, no matter what let's say that, like you were saying, the top 40 station, you know it's probably going to be a lot of the same artists. But wherever you are, whether you're here, whether you're back in, you know, Yellow Springs, Ohio, wherever you are, whatever the AAA station is playing, it might be totally different than what you're hearing over here or over there, you know? Yeah. And it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool because I feel like you get more of a music discovery aspect, too.
You get music discovery, and you also get the regionalism that mm-hmm. is so missing, not right. just from radio, but just our culture, you know, in general, with, you know, between whatever, fast food and restoration hardware and Abercrombie. You know what I mean? It's like everything, mm-hmm. everybody is everything, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Is there any difference when it comes to new music discovery, which is actually the motto of WFUV and other stations in the format? Is it more exciting to break a brand new artist, or do you still get a big thrill out of playing new music by someone like Paul Simon, who's been around for 50 years, or just two different kinds of great things that you love? New music is new music.
Yeah, I think it is an equal thing. But I'm especially proud of the work that we do at WFUV to keep the lights on for the greats, you know? Because mm-hmm. I can't help but think when we're looking at 50 years from now, you know, it's Van Morrison, it's Bob Dylan, it's Elvis Costello, it's Joni, it's, you know, it's Bonnie, it's, you know, and the fact that for whatever reason, ageism, I don't even know what the reasons are, that people wouldn't, you know, I mean, even like a Light FM, you know, like why wouldn't Light FM play Wristband?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you go, oh, paper? Yeah, hey, it's Tempo, it's Paul Simon. You're going to play Cecilia in, you know, 20 minutes.
It's tough for Elton John at this point to have a mainstream adult contemporary hit. And that's not even someone like Paul Simon who hasn't had a mainstream hit in years. It's I think ageism is part of it. Also, Top 40 and AC and adult Top 40 are all kind of the same format. It's all gotten younger. It's all just become one big mix.
Yeah,
I think that's part
like,
of it.
Like, what would happen if Light FM played Wristband? Like, would young people be like, oh, my God, this is terrible? Or, you know what I mean? Like, you just think, like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Not to single out Light FM, but you know what I mean.
I think part of it is the right song. I know in the 90s, you could, you know, Eric Clapton could all of a sudden, he sort of went right. AC right. all of a sudden mm-hmm. after many years. Pop music has just gotten younger overall, mm-hmm. and I think adult Definitely. Radio has just followed that. So yeah. I think it's a tougher time for veteran artists to have hits at any level. That's why I love seeing how Paul Simon, Mudcrutch, Tom Petty are on the charts. I'm like, these are acts we grew up with. You feel that personal connection. So I like how you said you leave the light on for these
yeah.
acts.
Yeah, and like, you know, you think about, I don't, you know, you hate to use the museum word, but, you know, you think about the great, you know, where the great works of art hang. You know, well, what's the music version of that? You know, where do, you know, I'm sitting here in the room staring at Otis Redding, you know? It's like, okay, guess what? Guy did more than one song, right. you know, or James Brown or whatever. You know, a lot of the vintage soul, too, you know, with the oldies stations, you know, there's a bit of history being rewritten there where, like, the world began in 1981, and you're like, actually, there was this decade called the 60s. There was some good music made then. You know, but most oldie stations, again, in the effort to swing younger, you know, have pushed up their clocks, you know. And we still have a 60s and 70s category at FUV. I mean, we don't play five tracks an hour, that's right. for sure. But, you know, I think that stuff's important.
Yeah. And I think what I also like about it is, like, you know, you'll see at the year-end lists, for instance, for albums, you know, a place like Rolling Stone or even like other major publications will be like, you know, touting this Bob Dylan album or this Paul Simon or whatever. But then you're like, okay, well, is this getting played on the radio anywhere? And the answer is oftentimes it's like AAA. And right. you're like, cool, at least, you know, I can go somewhere. I know I can go somewhere and actually hear these songs that people are talking about as like, oh, yeah, no, these are like some of the best songs of the year, best albums of the year. And you're like, okay, well, who's playing them? You go there, and it's cool, and you also get to hear, like, right now, like, the Stone Roses are back, and, like, you get to hear the Stone Roses, just, like, that's
Primal
awesome.
Scream is back.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's so cool. It's good to see, because, I think AAA definitely has, like, the highest range of, like, youngest to oldest, just, like, such a multi-decade, you know, and that's really cool to see, you know, coming from me, you know, looking at playlists every week, because, you know, you can get kind of caught, I think, in, like, oh, yeah, you know, these band of guys are all, you know, in their 20s, whatever, you know, and it's like the whole chart.
Yes.
But, or like looking at AAA, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, I got Paul Simon there, but I also got like, you know, someone a lot younger, you know, I can't like think of it.
Margaret Glasby.
Yeah, Margaret, that's a great example because that song's fantastic.
Fantastic.
You and I. Yeah, so that's a great example as well, for sure. So,
and it's where Adele has crossed over. Mm-hmm. Adele started at AAA. Mumford & Sons, all these acts that are so mainstream. Nora Jones, going back to earlier years when she was starting. What a legacy that the format has for crossing over artists.
And yeah. I think that's important, too. And in order to do that, right, you have to take chances. You have to take risk. And mostly on the non-com, and we are more easily positioned to take risk based on the context that we could surround around things and based on the fact that we're using a listener-supported model. And so our listeners want to see us take risks. And then our hard work is to continue to find enough listeners who feel that way, you know, to keep it sustained. But taking risks is important. I mean, I remember when I first heard Mumford, you know, I was one of the first, you know, we were one of the first people to play Mumford in New York and like Little Lion Man. And I was like, guys, really? Like, this isn't going to get on the radio? What are you thinking? You know? And then after the second or third time I heard it, I said, oh, no, this is going to be all over the radio because it's different. It doesn't sound like everything else. It's special. It cuts through all the noise, all the whatever the noise of the time was, you know. And, you know, right now, like things I'm excited about, like this new Chance the Rapper record, talking about things that are special and different are going to cut through, you know.
Chance the Rapper? On FUV.
Wait till you hear mm-hmm. that, Gary.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Totally right. Yes.
Disturbed, Chance the Rapper. Are you sure this is the right?
I mean, there was a DJ Shadow song with Run the Jewels that was getting played on some AAA stations too. It's like, oh, Run the Jewels on AAA radio.
Yeah.
It's so cool. It's like exciting. But like you said, that's the stuff that's cutting through, and it's different and it's exciting. And that's what I love to hear is when I'm like, you know, driving down the road or whatever, and I hear something like that pop up. I'm like, oh man, wasn't expecting that. Awesome, you know.
I played that Run the Jewels DJ Shadow tune a few times, like on my show on Friday night. That's another thing about FUV, like having the specialty shows gives us another added place
whole
to take risks
on Friday nights.
Yeah, my thing's
host,
whole wide right. world, and we could take even more chances with some of our specialty shows. Paul Cavalcante's Cavalcade, Russ has the alternate side, you know, so that gives us another chance to take risks. But one thing I was going to say about your comment, Kevin, about the multi-decade thing was like, I think radio or you know, a lot of media entertainment used to be programmed like based on demographics and the age of people. And I think like the whole Napster thing changed all of that because anyone in their 20s or 30s or anyone cool or whatever, music lover in their 20s or 30s has had as much access to Otis Redding as somebody in their 60s,
right.
you know,
mm-hmm.
thanks to that. There was good stuff that came out of all of that stuff where music, you know, or a Sam Cooke or gosh, for that matter, Hendrix or, you know, or Joni Mitchell or whatever. So I think it's a very interesting time because it used to be like, oh, you're going to program your radio station. Well, choose your demographic and then just play music that they grew up listening to. And I think that whole rule book has gone out the window. And I think that smart AAA stations are the ones who have recognized that that rule book has gone out the window. You could be in your 30s and love Sam Cooke. And you could be in your 60s and love Yesayer.
Yeah.
It gets tricky to like kind of figure that out in the data, but I've got anecdotal proof that those people exist.
And you guys have such a deeper playlist than most stations too, so that's another advantage that you're just breaking so much more new music than probably any other station on the dial here in New York.
Yeah, I'd say definitely here in New York, you know, we've got the Peak in the suburbs, so keep a good eye on those guys and what they're playing, you know, and they take some chances and they play a lot of cool stuff, you know. I think, you know, they have a little, like, once we put something in recurrent, they'll pull it up as a current. You know, hey, go for it, guys. They're like, well, FUV road tested this one for us. Now let's add Bourne's, you know. Hey, I mean, that's, you know, makes sense. Chris Herman's buddy. I mean, I get that. And you know, all boats rise is my feeling there, you know. You know, in my time at FUV, we've had a couple of commercial competitors roll through. You know, we had the RXP was in town for a bit. You know, and these things will happen. You know, it's a lucky position to not have a commercial competitor. You know, right now, and you know, a band like the Strokes can drop a new song, and we can own it on the radio in New York City. The only place you're going to hear new Beck or new music from the Strokes is FUV.
Does it surprise you or make you sad that rock radio is so much less in New York than how we used to have a WNEW, the old, a WNEW? Do you feel like New York is a rock town? There could be more rock radio going forward. I know you guys are happy to pretty much have it to your own at this point.
Yeah.
But in terms of rock music.
No, it's weird. I mean, as a music fan and as somebody who grew up here, I think it's odd, you know? And you got the Q, you know? And, I mean, they do good stuff, but it's like, come on, guys. Like, you know, they don't even play, like, a single new thing. Like, what do you got to do to get, you know? Obviously, they're playing their, you know, they got their rule book that they're following. But it's like, all right, so you got Q104, you know? You get CBS FM, you know? But it's like, no, there isn't, you know? You just got a couple of suburban rock stations, you know, DHA in Jersey and The Peak what do you got in Long Island these days? Yeah, I mean, there isn't even anything in Long Island these days, you know? I mean, of course, I remember the old days of WLIR and, you know, DRE and stuff and what an impact they made for music and bands. And, you know, sometimes as I think about what I hope for FUV, you know, I hope that FUV can kind of have that impact that DRE and LIR had for a music scene.
Well, part of it, too, is AAA is in such a good place right now with all these acts we're talking about crossing over. It's not quite the same at alternative and especially active rock. None of that is going mainstream at this point. So AAA is at least maybe the closest going from rock to mainstream at this point of all the rock formats. That's good for you guys.
Yeah, that's a good observation. That's a very good observation. I agree with that. You know, I hadn't really thought about it like that. Even like if you just look at like who's on SNL and Fallon and stuff, it's like most of those are our people.
Right, Margo Price.
Absolutely.
I mean, that was incredible.
Yeah.
You know, incredible. And that's a record that's almost like a little too country for FUV or whatever, but I was like, no, we're running with this, guys. We got to play this. It's just too good.
Absolutely.
Have you spent any time with that album?
Oh,
cover to cover,
fantastic.
It is amazing.
Yeah,
fantastic.
It might be like one of the best records of the year, you know?
It's one of mine right now, 100%.
It's like, you know, if you said to me, Rita, you like country music, I'd be like, yeah, Gillian Welch or whatever, Johnny Cash. You know, I mean, definitely, I'm not afraid of twang or whatever, but like the success of that, listener response on that, Sturgill Simpson, Robert Ellis, really been very solid, you know.
I think there's a real listener appetite for that more organic country music because country, commercial country, has gotten so poppy at this point. So I think people like Sturgill Simpson, Chris Stapleton, they're finding that in the Americana world, in the FUV world. So it's another good thing that you guys are sort of happening upon.
Nice to have the latitude, too, to go from, like, Yesayer to Margo Price and stuff. And, you know, listen, there's sometimes been driving around in my little Subaru, like, are we just doing too much here? You know, are we trying to go to, you know, can, you know, a new song from The Strokes and a vintage Johnny Cash, you know, I want to be a good programmer. I want to be a great programmer, you know, like, can this work? You know, because sometimes I'm in my car and I'm like, oh, man, I don't know, you know. But
you don't want to be too weird.
You don't want to be too weird because, you know, how far can you push the spectrum?
Right.
You know, because you got your middle and then you got your edges. And, you know, the more the edges go, what happens to the middle and stuff? And these are the conversations we have every week at FUV with our, you know, with the whole programming team and stuff. And, yeah, I think it's important that we have those conversations and continue to think about it. And but it is kind of remarkable that in New York City there is a station where you can hear The Strokes and Margo Price and Michael Kiwanuka and New Beck and, you know, old, you know, you hear something from The Supremes out of nowhere or Jackson Brown or New Bonnie Raitt. I mean, that was a record that we just loved on FUV, you know, and so many, like, here come air quotes, young people I talked to, you know, loved the new Bonnie Raitt. Like, it was so great. And even artists, you know. And, oh, yeah, that was something else you triggered, Kevin, when you mentioned before about the multi-decade thing. Like, I feel like most of the younger artists we play on FUV like the older artists that we, you know what I mean? So if you look at it from an artist point of view, like, and the new Aaron Neville album, like, he has Galactic is his backing band. How hip is that?
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Aaron Neville's 75, but Galactic, you know, so it's like, you know, so in that way, too, you can see how this can all come together.
Kevin, yeah, has all this music made you want to buy a car and drive around and listen to radio and not go to Maine?
I'm not going to keep it in my neighborhood. I'll get towed every week. But it's actually kind of cool because not just, you know, is AAA sometimes crossing over to mainstream top 40 now, but I've noticed in the last couple months, you know, even like active rock is starting to play some of these bands. Like the record companies would trigger that. Like I thought about, like, oh yeah, like I talked to Bill Weston at WMMR in Philadelphia for the rock radio programmers, and he talked about the record company. He also talked about I think you pronounce it Kaleo,
right?
They're Icelandic, and their album just came out last Friday. And you know that thing, you know, it can go AAA with All the Pretty Girls and Way Down We Go, but then you flip it with the song No Good that was on the vinyl soundtrack, and suddenly you've got yourselves a active rock hit.
Yeah, right.
And it's kind of cool to see, you know, some of these bands are able to do both now. You know, Red Hot Chili Peppers, even, you know, it's number, I think it's number one right now at AAA, but it's also almost number one at active rock, you know, so you're seeing more crossover there, which is kind of cool, you know. And I almost feel like it's not so much that it's active rock going into AAA, it's more the opposite, which is kind of cool to see. But it also means like the lines are blurred even further.
Yes,
so
indeed.
You know,
yes indeed.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you guys a question before we which is, what do you think radio, not me or FUV or whatever, but just in general, because you guys have a front row seat, what do you think radio is missing the boat on these days, like just in general, like what do you see as like the areas for improvement?
You know what I mean? Musically, you mean just as a medium?
Yes.
Itself? I'll say it's finding a way to reach younger listeners with just the technology of radio. I think radio has what streaming services and other anything that isn't radio doesn't have, and that's these powerful signals. That is, it just feels very legitimate. I think there's something, radio maybe doesn't play that up enough, that we're not just another option. We're radio. It's been around for so many years, and it's just that technology has so much reach. It can do so much good in communities. It can be local. I think there's just a lot of things that radio has, and maybe there needs to be more outreach about that, mm-hmm. teaching listeners all the things radio has that you can't get anywhere else.
Mm, interesting.
And I'll continue to tout Discovery. You know, I remember growing up, I would hear, you know, I listened to like the rock station in Dayton, Ohio, and they would play, you know, they would have one night a week, and they would have like a local music show, and any band could submit their music, and you know, that's not to say they would definitely get played, but they at least had the opportunity, you know, as long as the programmers thought it was good enough. And I feel like that went away after a while on that station, and I feel like a lot of stations, I don't hear that as much anymore, especially on some of those formats, and like an alt rock or a active rock format. And that's something that I really enjoyed, because it gave me a reason sometimes to listen to those stations, whereas otherwise I'm like, well, why would I not just like go to onto, you know, maybe nowadays, why would I not just go into Spotify and listen to those songs, you know, because I know what you're going to play already, you know, and I get that on demand possibly right now if I'm paying $5 a month on Spotify, you know, why not just go there and listen to 21 Pilots, you know, whereas, you know, if some of these stations played like more music that, you know, I'm not familiar with, or local acts that I'm really not familiar with, unless I'm going to local shows, you know, that gives me a little more incentive to listen in, and that gives me a little more incentive possibly in the public radio aspect to, you know, donate, and to, mm-hmm. because I know I'm going to get like stuff that maybe it would be a lot harder for me to find otherwise. Mm-hmm. So I think that's sometimes what I'm missing. But like I said before, I think AAA is one of the places that does that a little better. And I like that. That's why I love listening to it whenever I get a chance.
And I go back to the personality too, that feeling of companionship you get mm-hmm. on radio, on a station like FUV, where these people, you feel like they're your friends, even if you've never met them. That's something that I think only radio has.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree.
Well, Rita, keep on doing what you're doing. It's a great legacy at WFUV of new music discovery, and it's the personalities and everything that makes radio great and WFUV great. And congratulations again on being named one of Billboard's most influential rock programmers. Could have said
Thank
that
you.
At any point in recent years, but
you
just got the honor this year. So always well deserved.
Thank you, and it was really fun to talk to you guys.